headlines. Day 11 of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Kiev says Moscow has destroyed an airport in central Ukraine and is preparing to shell the port city of Odessa. A second attempt to evacuate thousands of civilians trapped in Ukraine's Mariupol fails. Moscow and Kiev trade blame. And Pakistani police say they have identified the network behind the Friday suicide attack at a Shia mosque in Peshawar that killed over 60 people. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumish Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Russia's offensive in Ukraine is in its 11th day, with several major cities witnessing heavy clashes. Intense fighting is taking place near the capital, Kiev. Russian forces are trying to take control of the towns of Bucha and Irpin near the city. Fierce battles are also underway on the edge of Mykolaiv. The southern city connects the Black Sea port city of Odessa in the west through a road. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia is preparing to shell Odessa, located near the Romanian and Moldovan borders.
They are preparing to bomb Odessa. This is going to be a military crime. This is going to be a historical crime and a war crime.
Russia says it has disabled a military airbase in western Ukraine with long-range, high-precision weapons, and it has destroyed an airport in the center using missiles. To the south, the evacuation of some 400,000 civilians in the city of Mariupol has failed for a second time. The process was due to take place under a ceasefire deal. Each side now is blaming the other for violating the truce. President Vladimir Putin says Russia will end the conflict if its demands are met and Ukraine stops fighting. In the meantime, the UN says Ukraine is the fastest-growing refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. The world body says 1.5 million people have so far fled the country. The U.S. is stepping up its military support for Kiev. Washington says it wants to supply Ukraine with warplanes to bolster its Air Force capabilities against Russia.
We are looking actively now at the question of airplanes that Poland may provide to Ukraine, and looking at how we might be able to backfill should Poland decide to produce those supply those planes. Sandu.
Blinken added that he cannot provide a timeline for the delivery of the jets. American officials have said under a potential deal, Poland would send Soviet-era aircraft to Ukraine in return for American F-16 fighter jets. That comes as Kiev has asked for Russian-made planes, which Ukrainian pilots are trained to fly. Ukraine's Western allies have been pouring weapons, ammunition, and funds into the country since the beginning of the Russian attack. Washington has approved $350 million in military equipment for Kiev, the largest such package in U.S. history. America and NATO, however, have rejected Ukraine's demand to impose a no-fly zone over the country. Meanwhile, outcry is growing over the European Union's comparatively red carpet treatment of Ukrainian refugees after years of appalling treatment towards non-white asylum seekers. Many in France are demanding that European nations take responsibility for all refugees, especially for a refugee crises which have been fomented by Western violence. Romain Mazahari has more from Paris.
In a historic and surprising decision, the European Union has decided to give refugees from war the instant right to live within the bloc and freely travel. They also have the right to work. They even now have rights to housing and medical care. There is one catch. This only applies to Ukrainians. These rights are not being extended to refugees from Palestine, Yemen, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Mali, the Central African Republic, or any of the other countries in which Western armed interventions provoked refugee crises. Seemingly no one would begrudge Ukrainian refugees their human rights, but many in France are wondering why they are getting treated totally differently from black, brown, and Muslim asylum seekers.
Apparently, you have to be white and Christian to be treated properly by the European Union. That's the sad reality, and it's totally unacceptable. We cannot discriminate according to religion, nationality, or color, which are all things which we don't choose. What we can choose is to be human and to have solidarity with each other.
Drowning by the dozens in Calais, France. Freezing to death in Poland. Packed into camps in Italy, building steel fences, denying basic sanitation, fear-mongering about refugees election after election. The long-running European refugee crisis has taken a new turn, and yet standard European policy remains mostly unchanged. An outcry is growing for the European Union to extend their unity, and many say their humanity, towards non-white refugees.
We have to receive refugees and give them normal, humane conditions, regardless of what continent they come from. We have seen acts towards refugees on the Polish border, and we can't allow such things to happen in France. The government has to treat all refugees with total equality and with urgent measures like proper lodging.
Many say the open discrimination, which reveals a deep racism and xenophobia, as well as an arrogant hypocrisy, will ultimately stain the European Union around the world and at home. Many in the French media are describing Ukrainian refugees as somehow qualitatively superior to other asylum seekers. However, many hope that the European Union realizes soon that all refugees are equal and deserving of dignity, assistance, and the same rights without discrimination. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Western media have been extensively covering the conflict between Russia and Ukraine since the very beginning. It broke out on February 24th. Those media have been praising the Ukrainian people for responding to their government's call to pick up arms and fight Russian forces. But things are different when it comes to covering Palestinian struggle against Israel, which has occupied their land for decades now.
The Western media's portrayal of Ukraine's suffering is somehow different compared to those suffering from wars in other countries like Yemen, Libya, Ethiopia, Palestine, and Syria has sparked widespread criticism. News coverage of civilian Ukrainians defending their country by making Molotov cocktails and arming themselves with the state-given machine guns has also been celebrated as heroic, and these people have been called freedom fighters. This empathy has not been voiced for others, like Palestinians who experience an identical crisis, yet are labeled terrorists when defending their land. The suffering in Ukraine must be highlighted. However, portraying Ukraine's pain as more human shows the deep hypocrisy at play. Now, the West has come under criticism over what is seen as double standards regarding conflicts in other parts of the world.
You're happy to correctly use the most strong and robust language to describe the crimes against humanity of Vladimir Putin, but you will not use the same strength of language when it comes to describing the Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, when it is now being documented and detailed by two of the most respected human rights organizations in the world, and indeed has been alleged by dozens and dozens of non-governmental organizations, and to be honest, anybody who looks honestly.
Barrett asked whether the Irish Parliament will impose sanctions against Israel. He also asked whether the Irish legislative body would support calls for referring Israel to international courts over its crimes against humanity. This is not the first time the Western media has shown its bias. A similar narrative was pushed against Palestinians last year. Israel's decades-long occupation, its crippling blockade and military grip over Palestinians, as well as a wave of demolitions, led to a two-week war that killed around 260 Palestinians and 13 Israelis. News outlets and political figures spoke out on the conflict, but it started with the opposite end of the story, starting with Palestinian reactions and violence. While Israel was the real aggressor, they focused on rockets fired by the Hamas resistance movement that came later in retaliation. The double standards of the US and the West are the focal point of tension, violence, and bloodshed, and make Washington an unacceptable mediator and the country that is unable to achieve stability in the world. The war in Yemen is another example. Scant coverage of the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Yemenis killed by arms from Western countries, especially the US. Yet the media portrays the real Yemeni army as the aggressor, and the ones doing the bombing as the ones who are following the path of righteousness.
Moving on, Pakistani officials say they have identified the network that carried out a suicide bombing in the northwestern city of Peshawar on Friday. Operations to dismantle the network have already been kicked off. Special investigation teams of the Counterterrorism Department and Peshawar police are involved. So far, a number of suspects have been arrested. The blast hit a Shia mosque when people were holding Friday prayers. The death toll has now climbed to 63. Nearly 200 were wounded too. The attack was the deadliest to hit Pakistan since 2018. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility. The bombing drew a widespread international condemnation and raised calls for tackling terror groups operating in Pakistan. We have talked to the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masood Shajadeh, for comments. So let's take a listen.
First of all, I have to say that the motivation for this should not be misunderstood, that this is sort of opposition to United States and Pakistan's policy towards U.S. at any particular time. This is happening because of sectarianism. Sectarianism is a tool that the enemies of Islam have used to divide Muslim community, because a divided Muslim community, it's then will not be able to function as a unit, and it will be manipulated and used and abused. Now, several types of enemies have used this. You know, U.S. have been involved in this. There are stooges. Saudi Arabia has been involved in this. And many of us, including Islamic Human Rights Commission, been involved in bringing people together, because these actions, this bomb, and indeed sort of abuses by others of companions of the Prophet and so forth, these are activities that comes from different community, targeting the communities, trying to fuel the sectarianism.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has underlined the need for development of clean energies, including nuclear power. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says it is vital for the country to pursue the development of non-fossil energy, including nuclear, wind, and solar power. The leader added that the world and regional states are increasingly moving towards clean energy. Ayatollah Khamenei made the comments during a ceremony to mark the National Tree Planting Day. During the ceremony, the leader also planted a sapling. He drew attention to the preservation of the environment and warned that destroying natural resources is tantamount to undermining national interests. The U.S. Secretary of State dismisses his Russian counterpart's demands on the revival of the 2015 Iran deal. Antony Blinken describes as irrelevant Sergei Lavrov's call for a U.S. guarantee that the sanctions imposed on Russia over Ukraine will not harm Moscow's cooperation with Tehran. In an interview with CBS News, Blinken said sanctions imposed on Russia for attacking Ukraine have nothing to do with the Iran deal known as the JCPOA. The top U.S. diplomat added that the 2018 unilateral pullout of the accord was one of his country's worst mistakes. He said returning to the agreement is profoundly in U.S. interests. Diplomatic efforts are still underway in the Austrian capital to restore the accord. Iran says the revival of the JCPOA hinges on the removal of U.S. sanctions and guarantees that Washington will not quit the deal again. We talked to our Vienna-based correspondent Homa Lezgi. She explains how closer cooperation between Iran and the IAEA will help advance JCPOA talks.
the agreement or arrangement that's been agreed upon between Iran and the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is being seen, of course, as a positive move when also it comes to the JCPOA talks that we're discussing now. We are hearing that today more meetings are set to take place, although, of course, we know that the E3 negotiators have gone back to the capitals for a little break. But we had a tweet, the latest from the UK diplomat, where she said that our work is continuing from the capitals via phone calls, for instance. She referred to a phone call she had with the Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister for Economic Diplomacy, Dr. Safari, who's in Vienna, as well as, of course, discussions continuing between the E3, the EU coordinator, Enrico Mora, and the US as well. So, again, this agreement between Iran and the agency is seen as one of the issues that's going to help the JCPOA talks, because Iran had said that it wants the issue of its safeguards-related questions to be as soon as possible, basically, to be closed or permanently resolved, so that would not be used as leverage by any of the participants or any kind of pressure by any of the participants if and when the JCPOA is indeed implemented.
There's been another stabbing attack in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Quds, with the incident coming to an end, with Israeli forces killing a teenage Palestinian. The resistance movement Hamas has reacted by heaping praise on what it called the heroic stabbing operation and saying it is a natural response to the crimes of Israeli occupiers. We've spoken to our West Bank correspondent for an update. Let's take a listen.
Another Palestinian teen was shot dead by the Israeli forces in Al-Quds, in the occupied city of Al-Quds. What happened, according to the Israeli military, that almost a 19-year-old Palestinian, originally from the city of Al-Quds, just before Al-Fajr prayers, arrived at Bab Hutta, north Al-Aqsa Mosque, and tried to stab Israeli soldiers there. Immediately, Israeli officers opened fire, wounding him, and they left him bleeding until he passed away. First, the Israeli military statement claimed that two Israeli officers were wounded during this operation as the Palestinian youth stabbed them. However, later, they said that one Israeli officer was wounded by the stabber and the other was wounded from the shooting by the Israeli officers. However, Palestinian witnesses there said they were heading to the Al-Aqsa Mosque for the Fajr prayers, and they heard Israeli soldiers screaming at the Bab Hutta. They rushed there. They found a Palestinian youth bleeding and the Israeli forces not allowing anyone to rescue his life.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of piano.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 6th, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any message for our great listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And happy the auspicious birth anniversary of the third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Yes, congratulations on this auspicious occasion to all freedom-seeking people around the world. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and today is a very great Sunday. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports are important to us because they enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Heikki Pranin from Finland, Ratan Kumar Pal from India, and Rifat Jamil from Bangladesh. So, Heikki, Ratan, and Rifat, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And here, a million thanks to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us letters, emails, and postcards from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails or letters. Oh, we've received 3 postcards from around the world. One of these postcards is from Maurice Weinberg from Latvia. I think he has sent it to us on the occasion of the Christian New Year and the Christmas, which is past a few days. We've received a letter. This is a handwritten letter from Richard King from the UK. Of course, Richard King from the UK has also sent us a postcard. This postcard has the picture of London. And from India, we've received an email from Bidan Kundra Sanyal from Germany. We've received an email from Joachim Thiel. And last but not the least is an email from Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. Stay with us, please. I will be back with these kind and great emails from around the world. Welcome back. As I said, we've received many great postcards from around the world, and Maurice Weinberg from Latvia has sent us two postcards, and they're so beautiful. One of them is actually a greeting card, because you can see these postcards. These two cards have the images of Christmas decorations, and thank you very much, Maurice Weinberg from Latvia, for sending us these beautiful cards. Of course, in Iran, we Iranians don't celebrate the New Year on Christmas, and on Christian New Year, we in Iran celebrate the New Iranian Year on Nowruz, which starts on the beginning of spring. As I said, from the UK, Richard King has sent us a letter. This is a handwritten letter, and this is attached with a greeting card, a postcard, which has the picture of London. Thank you very much, Richard. And let's see Richard King from the UK. What Richard says, he says, "Dear Sarah, Madam, the last 18 months have proved to be a very challenging and strange time for all of us as the COVID pandemic sweeps the world. Here in the UK, we have had to change our normal way of life, some people shielding, others working from home, and for the vast majority, keeping a low profile and social contact to a minimum. As a keen radio listener for over 40 years, my enforced stay at home was made much easier by being able to listen to international shortwave broadcasts. The fact that stations such as yours stayed on the air and broadcast news from other parts of the world helped me understand the global situation. It was a relief to know that it was not only in the UK that we were suffering from the pandemic, and that other countries were facing their own difficulties. Your programs have always been entertaining, and it was a pleasure to hear about the news, arts, historical articles, and other cultural events in Iran. Much has been made over recent years about the possible decline in shortwave broadcasting. I'm glad to say that your programs made a difference in a difficult time. It is important that you keep broadcasting, as you still have an active and appreciative audience. Congratulations and keep up the good work. I have detailed below a reception report of some of the programs that I had. I would very much like to receive your QSL card or a letter of confirmation of the broadcast. This will then go into my collection. I wish all the staff at the station good luck and good health in the future. Best regards, Richard King." Richard King from the UK. Salam, and warmest greetings to you from Iran, Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Many thanks for sending us such a detailed letter and, of course, your beautiful postcard. Thank you very much for sending us this letter, Richard King from the UK. Of course, it was a very challenging and a strange time for many of the world people and world countries. Fortunately, in Iran, the majority of people have been inoculated, and the rate of, COVID-19 has decreased dramatically. And we hope that people around the world, especially our listeners, be immune and safe from this brutal virus and lethal virus. And I, on behalf of my staff at IRB English Radio, wish you all the best. We wish you good health for you and all our listeners around the world. Richard King, we are very glad that you enjoy our programs because you describe them as entertaining. So you listen to different parts of IRB English Radio programs. As you said, you listen to the news, arts, historical articles, and cultural events, and that's great. Thank you very much for reflecting your views. Richard King, write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Please stay with us. This is Listeners Special, and let's see what Bithan Chandra Sanyal from India says. I am pleased to hear that due to Tehran's role, the dialogue between Tehran and the four Western countries in Vienna, the Austrian capital, on renewing the nuclear deal and lifting the illegal U.S. sanctions has reached a critical stage. I hope that an important agreement will be signed at the end of this dialogue. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Bithan Chandra Sanyal from India. Thank you very much for sending us this email. That's great that you're following the world developments, especially Iran's peaceful nuclear program and Iran's nuclear deal with four Western countries in Vienna. That's great that you're following these developments. Of course, a good agreement is a win-win agreement when U.S. illegal and unilateral sanctions are removed. Yes, that's a good agreement. Thank you very much, Bithan Chandra Sanyal from India, for sending us this email and your consideration to the world developments, especially Iran developments. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. From Germany, we've received an email from Joachim Thiel. I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name, Joachim. Let's see what he says. Hello from Germany. I found your station while tuning over the bands and want to write a short report about reception conditions over here in western part of Germany, hoping this will be useful finding out your coverage. Please acknowledge this report with so-called QSL and add a current transmission schedule if possible. Thanks a lot for your reply. Salam and warm greetings to you, Joachim Thiel from Germany. And I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email. We're so happy that you could catch the signals of IRB English Radio. This is great, Joachim Thiel from Germany. Let this mutual relationship continue. So write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English Radio programs. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. And as for your request for the transmission schedule, you can find our schedule in our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Because sending any schedule on behalf of IRB English Radio is not possible because of coronavirus pandemic. Of course, this is temporary. We will soon send our great listeners around the world the souvenirs of IRB English Radio. And after a short break, I will be back with the last email from the Netherlands. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. Dear Voice of Iran Radio, I think he means the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting or IRIB English Radio. Glad to confirm your broadcast today. Please verify my audio recording, and if correct, please verify by your EQSL. Thank you very much. Salam and greetings to you, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Yes, we will send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I congratulate all freedom-seeking people around the world on the auspicious birth anniversary of the third infallible era of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Congratulations to all. Many thanks for being with this program, Listeners Special, the Sunday program, your program. Have a good time. Please keep in touch with us and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio. Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
in the limelight.
The Zionist regime's repression of human rights workers will only escalate as the investigation progresses and with no pushback from the regime's allies, who seem happy to uphold international law when it suits them. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Maureen Claire Murphy, journalist. This article is published under the heading International Silence Fuels Israeli Regime Persecution. Stay tuned for more. The Zionist regime's recent designation of several prominent Palestinian groups as terrorist organizations should be easy for liberal democracies to condemn. The designations were handed out based on secret evidence and came without any due process. The organizations in question are highly respected locally and well integrated into the international human rights scene. But the EU, US, Canada, and UK have yet to explicitly reject the Zionist regime's shabby attempt. In the words of Zayd Raad al-Hussein, the former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, to sully the reputations of Palestinian human rights defenders, none of these governments appear convinced by the Zionist regime's accusations, but they have not even given their ally a deadline to present credible evidence justifying the designations aimed at starving those groups of international funding. And in its attempt to isolate and marginalize these groups, some of which provide key services to Palestine's most vulnerable communities, the Zionist regime is profoundly upending the lives of the human rights and social service providers in its crossers. One of those human rights defenders is Khatam Safin, the president of the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees. In February, Safin was sentenced to 16-month imprisonment by an Israeli regime military court. She was already in Israeli regime detention and had been since November 2020. Half of that time was spent in administrative detention without charge or trial. When the Zionist regime finally did level charges against Safin, they alleged that she was helping to oversee the transfer of funds from the now outlawed Palestinian groups, including the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees, to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. As is typical of its cases against Palestinians dragged through its military court system, the Zionist regime's case against Safin relied on secret evidence to which neither she nor her lawyer were privy. Like many Palestinians denied due process in the Zionist regime's military court system, Safin agreed to a plea deal that dropped the money laundering charges. She was convicted of membership in the PFLP and to being president of the now Union of Palestinian Women's Committees. The Palestinian human rights group Al-Wamir observes that the Zionist regime initially leveled a long set of inflated charges against Safin, well beyond any singular specific act she allegedly carried out. This is another time-worn Israeli regime tactic. Inflating the number of charges is a practice widely used by the Zionist regime military prosecution to extend detention and trial procedures as a punitive and coercive measure against the detainee, Al-Wamir adds. In other words, the Zionist regime throws a spaghetti pot of charges at the wall and very little sticks. But deprived of anything resembling a fair trial, Palestinian detainees agree to plead guilty to lesser offenses they did not commit to curtail their ordeal and time away from their families. The Zionist regime also pressures Palestinians to accept IDEA plea deals in order to avoid having to prove their case against them in court. When Palestinians don't accept the plea deals, the process drags on. Muhammad al-Halabi, a charity worker living in Gaza, is a case in point. On seemingly unending trial, al-Halabi has been detained for more than a half a decade, and his case has gone to court some 170 times. Al-Halabi has turned down numerous plea deals, refusing to admit guilt for a crime he insists he did not commit. That is the hellish ordeal that Safin 60 was facing, and it was what Jonah Reshmavi 63 was up against when she took a similar plea deal that saw her sentenced to 13 months in prison for her work with the Palestinian Health Work Committees, a group declared illegal by the Zionist regime in early 2020. The Health Work Committees was not informed of the designation until the Zionist regime began an escalated campaign against the organization, arresting its director, Shatta Odeh, and closing its headquarters in Ramallah, the seat of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. Odeh 60 has been in Israeli regime detention since occupation troops stormed her home in July last year. The charges against Odeh primarily revolve around her leadership role in the Health Work Committees, according to Al-Damir. Odeh is also the chair of the Palestinian NGO Network, a coalition of dozens of Palestinian civil society groups. Al-Damir argues that the arrest of Odeh indicates the Zionist regime's increasing brazenness in clamping down and criminalizing Palestinian human rights defenders and civil society organizations that challenge the Zionist regime's settler colonialism and apartheid. Ultimately, the terror designations and the Zionist regime's long-standing campaign against Palestinian human rights defenders is aimed at preserving its impunity. The Zionist regime's moves against these individuals and groups is also a sign of desperation that it is losing its grip on the narrative, with a growing consensus among international human rights groups that the Zionist regime is practicing apartheid against Palestinians. Shawan Jabarin, the director of Al-Haq, one of the targeted organizations, told a panel recently convened by the Carter Center, "We removed the mask from their faces. Global human rights consensus now holds that the Zionist regime is a colonial regime. This is an oppressive regime. We crossed the red lines when we came to the issue of accountability and going after the Israeli criminals," he added. During that same event, Wessam Ahmad, also with Al-Haq, noted that the terror designations and other moves against the Palestinian groups are being issued by the same Israeli regime officials being investigated by the International Criminal Court. The movement at the level of the International Criminal Court is something that the Palestinian civil society organizations such as Al-Haq have been heavily involved in pushing forward, and despite the Zionist regime's attempts to stifle the progress towards this investigation, it has continued to move forward. Ahmad said it comes as no surprise that the Israeli regime would take such action during the process of investigation at the ICC. It's very much a reflection of the apartheid tactics to persecute those organizations and individuals that are seeking to challenge that regime. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime's repression of human rights workers will only escalate as the investigation progresses, and with no pushback from Israeli allies, who seem happy to uphold international law when it suits them.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat, or BAD 5. And via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on February 17, 2022 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
In other words, our capabilities were limited. It was the early days of the revolution, and there were a lot of problems. In such circumstances, Imam turned the war into a tool for power and national and international credibility for a revolutionary nation which was devoid of resources and equipment. The war was planned by the enemies to destroy the revolution, but Imam used the war as a means to strengthen and perpetuate the revolution, and to turn this threat into an opportunity, such as continuity in Imam's policies. I'd like to cite Tabriz as another example. I had met Shahid Bakri before the revolution. A friend from Mashhad who was studying at the University of Tabriz brought the late al-Mahdi Bakri to Mashhad. I saw him there. He was an ordinary student, but Imam turned a university student into a role model, a great figure and a brilliant commander. This was Imam's work. The likes of Mahdi Bakri and Shahid Qasim Soleimani were produced by Imam. It was Imam who created them. Such is the continuation of the revolution. It constantly turns the youth into great personalities and leaders of the revolution.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Therefore, the issue of the continuity of the revolutionary movement, as I said, the 29th of Bahman, was the engine of this revolutionary continuity, is one of the most important and fascinating aspects of our country's life in the present time and in the future. We must always keep this in mind and pursue, think about, act on it. And of course, everyone learned this lesson from Imam. We all learned this from Imam. So, what does continuation of the revolutionary movement mean? I have given examples. But in general, what are the examples of this continuation? Continuation of the revolutionary movement means that we consider the goals of the revolution and keep in sight all the needs of today and tomorrow, the needs of the present and the future that lead us to those goals, and satisfy these needs in whatever way possible. This means the continuation of the revolution.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.